Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time streaming or downloading the program, Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference or are just trying to make life in the Royal City more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Today I talk to Stephen O'Brien, the clerk for the City of Guelph. Most of the time, O'Brien's job has to do with managing city council meetings and advising council on matters of rules and procedure in those meetings. But in a couple of weeks, O'Brien's job gets bigger as he helps manage the opening of candidacy for the 2018 municipal election and all the filings of paperwork and organization therein. Election rules and insight is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. There's an election coming up. Two elections, actually, but for the purposes of this podcast, we're focused on the one that's coming up later this year, the municipal election. The guy to talk to about this is Stephen O'Brien, the city clerk. You may remember that Clerk O'Brien appeared on the Guelph Politicast way back in episode number 47 to talk about the conversion from standing committee to committee of the whole. But every 4 years, he has to add wrangling an election to his normal duties of wrangling city council. Now, as you likely already know, municipal politics are different from those at the federal and provincial level. There are no political parties in municipal politics, for example. We elect two representatives from our wards, and we also elect a mayor separately. And on top of that, we elect school board trustees for our two local school boards. It's a very busy election. So the rules have to be clear and concise in order for everything to run smoothly, and the onus is on the candidate since there's no party apparatus to help them out. That's probably why O'Brien and the City of Guelph Clerk's Office have been doing what they can to make sure as many people as possible can be armed in advance of the nomination with all the information they need to proceed. One info session has already been held at City Hall in the last couple of months, another is coming up, and there was the Women's Candidate School back in March. But it felt like there was still might be a need to offer the public something portable, something condensed, something less constrained to the confines of time and space. That sounds like a job for the Guelph Politicast. So this week on the podcast, I talked to O'Brien, and I asked him to take us through the process of becoming a candidate in the municipal election. What are the rules? What forms do you have to fill out? Where can you find them? And what do you need to know before and after you file your papers? We also talk about who comes up with the municipal election rules and why and what changes have been enacted by both the province and the city for this 2018 election year. On top of that, we talk about campaign finance rules and some of the common mistakes or oversights that people make running for office. Hopefully, this will be entertaining and informational, even if you're not running for office. So I caught up with Stephen O'Brien earlier this week at City Hall. Stephen O'Brien, thank you for joining me today.
No problem. Happy to be here.
To begin with, maybe you can describe what your role is in terms of the election and helping to organize the election. You're people probably better familiar with sitting as the left hand of the mayor at council meetings, but during election time, your job gets more complicated, bigger.
Bigger for sure, more complicated possibly, but the reality is we're thinking about elections actually a lot outside of the election year. So to get back to your original question, So as I've said to you before, and I think hopefully some of your listeners are aware, every Ontario municipality has a municipal clerk. Mm-hmm. So there are 444 of us across the province. And the reason being is it's a statutory position under the Act. And so with that responsibility often comes on sort of additional duties as assigned. And one of those comes through the Municipal Elections Act, which places the responsibility for serving as the returning officer for municipal and school board elections on the role of the clerk. So, you're quite right. We in the off election years or the years in between in the term, we're there to support the legislative process. As you know, we facilitate access and privacy work and records and information management and that kind of thing for the organization and for the city. We provide public services, marriage licenses, marriage ceremonies, things like that. But during the election year, the returning officer hat comes on it. But as I said earlier, really we're thinking about the election throughout the term and are actually doing prep work as early as, you know, a year out from an election, following mm-hmm. election, we're starting to sort of plan and think about the next election.
And we'll get into this in a bit, but there was the added dimension that there were changes in the rules that necessitated having to bring, you know, proposals forward. I don't think it was exactly this time last year, or maybe it was almost this time last year that you came to council with the how the election was going to be set up, and that had a lot to do with internet voting and other
and ranked balloting was the other big piece. Yeah. So the role as returning officer is basically all encompassing in terms of the election administration. So we, part of your first question was some of the things that we do. So, you know, we manage a budget that supports the hiring of election day workers. We hire a lot of folks from the public to come and work in the polls. We secure upwards of 50 locations, around 50 locations in, throughout the community to serve as voting locations. We undertake to procure equipment that will support us in the delivery of elections. So the live voters list systems that we used that allow sort of innovation in election service delivery, the use of the tabulators in the 2014 election, the work we did with internet voting, not this time around, but but that all of those sort of planning pieces are part and parcel of what we do.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that is driven by legislation. A lot of it is driven by council expectations and decisions that they can make. And a lot of it is driven by, you know, what we think as election administrators is going to work best for the city of Guelph.
You introduced the topic. The province sets the guidelines for municipal election rules, but the cities themselves and the municipalities themselves do have a wide kind of latitude in terms of how they enact it. And you brought up the ranked ballot thing.
Right.
London is moving forward. Most municipalities have not.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe you can talk a bit about how the province kind of sets things up, and then how what role the municipality plays in terms of deciding
sure.
what can.
So the overarching framework is the Municipal Elections Act. That's the piece of legislation that sets, you know, our rules. It's similar to Ontario's Elections Act and the Canada Elections Act in the sense that they're, you know, sort of, they set the standard, they set the foundation. Those pieces of legislation set the rules for elections at each of our levels of government in Canada. So we abide by the Municipal Elections Act, which, you know, it's probably not news to your listeners. We're creatures of the province. We've all heard that in terms of what the municipalities are in relation to the province. So they set legislation that basically sets the rules for us. So that's our baseline. Because of my role as a statutory officer, for lack of a better term, of the organization, there is some latitude that's provided to myself as returning officer under the Municipal Elections Act. So we can establish and set up procedures, clerk's procedures, and those procedures can sort of fill in the spots in where the legislation isn't so clear. And the legislation, I would say, the sort of the next level decision making, the legislation says very clearly where council needs to make decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, council determines the type, if any, of alternate voting methods. So that's when we talk about internet voting, when we talk about in 2018, similar to what we did in 2014, where we're using optical scan vote tabulators.
Mm-hmm.
They make those decisions. The other piece that was new in 2018, as you alluded to, was the ranked balloting piece. So City of London is the only Ontario municipality that's delivering a ranked balloting election, and that will be for their offices of mayor and councillors. And so those are the sort of two best examples. The technology or the equipment, the alternative voting methods, and, for example, ranked balloting, are decisions that reside with council. And the Act tells us, the Municipal Elections Act, the MEA, I'll say from now on, just for my CEs, but the MEA tells us that that's where council makes decisions.
Okay.
So it's sort of those three avenues. The legislation itself and the regulations under the legislation, where the legislation says council can make certain decisions, so then we report to council and request them to make those decisions. And then the other remaining piece is really left to the returning officer through the procedures that we maintain and manage as part of the administration of the election.
Mm-hmm. It seems complicated because when you're talking about the provincial or federal levels, you have Elections Canada, Elections Ontario.
Right.
But, you know, is that, you know, maybe you don't feel you can speak on that being the returning officer essentially, but, you know, I can see how that makes this process especially complicated from the point of view of you know, you who has to sort of enact everything and make sure you're going.
Yeah, I mean, it involves a lot of, you know, a lot of work with our counterparts in other municipalities and sort of, especially, and this is a really good example, from 2014 to 2018, we've seen a lot of legislative change. So it's about, you know, using the networks we have, talking to communities around us and understanding what they're considering in terms of, you know, responding to the specific requirements in the Act. And I've said this before, I think to you, I take the role of clerk, you know, very seriously. I enjoy serving at the privilege of council. Mm-hmm. A lot of staff are hired by the organization and the administration, and I certainly am in that vein. I report through a deputy CAO and on to Mr. Thompson, our CAO, and I there, you know, I understand the role in that sense, and I appreciate that role. But there is also this. This requirement of me, because of that statutory nature of my role, that I have to report to council. And in the case of, quite frankly, the election, I'm more reporting directly to the public in that vein. I have a responsibility to the people of Guelph to deliver an election that is fair, that is transparent, that is in keeping with the principles of the MEA, and meets the expectations and requirements of the community. And so it is challenging. You know, the analogy that I've heard is that, you know, the province and the federal government have CEOs, chief electoral officers.
Right.
The role of the clerk is absolutely unique in the public sector, and you know, I say that without trying to gloat or sound
yeah.
arrogant or anything. But the reality is, I'm at the same time, you know, akin to my counterparts of the province. I'm the clerk of the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the chief electoral officer. Because of my responsibilities for records and information management, you know, you could say it's akin to the chief librarian of the library of the legislature.
Right.
I mean, I have responsibilities for access and privacy. So it's a very all-encompassing role. And it, at times, you have to find yourself saying, you know, myself and my staff team right now are wearing this hat.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, Monday evening comes along and we take off that hat and put on the clerk hat. And so we serve that role and serve that role both to the administration, to council, and to the public. So it's unique in that way, but it's a lot of fun that way too.
You want a raise is what I'm hearing.
No. I'm quite happy with where I'm at. I'm compensated very fairly, and I'm appreciative of that.
So for people who are interested in running, where does that process begin in terms of the actual paperwork?
So it begins May 1st.
Mm-hmm.
The paperwork that's required is statutory forms that the province creates. They're effectively the nomination paper and some associated documents that go with it. What we do is we take that information that the province requires of us and requires of candidates to submit to us, and we package it into a nomination package. Mm-hmm. And so that nomination package is basically the kickoff for any candidate's campaign. It provides them with not only information, but it makes official for them their candidacy for municipal office or school board office. And so we're ready to hit the ground rolling come May 1st. We're going to put online those packages as of April 30th.
Mm-hmm.
So that individuals can see them in advance and sort of digest the information that's in them. A lot of the information we have is already making its way to our website at guelph.ca/vote.
Mm-hmm.
So that information is becoming available publicly. And so, yeah, the package is going to be your nomination paper. New this year is the requirement to have 25 endorsements.
Mm-hmm.
And so that paperwork is also included in the nomination package. And we put that information online as the 30th, and candidates can come in and submit that paperwork, and then it effectively kicks off their campaign.
Mm-hmm.
The nomination period runs May 1st to July 27 this year, which is a very different time frame from the January 1 to sort of mid-September in 2014 in previous elections.
Yeah.
Much shortened, and so.
Well, that was one of the provincial changes.
Yes.
Am I correct in remembering that the 25 signatures is also new provincial regulation?
Yeah, so the last, I will say, 4 or 5 election cycles at least municipally did not require endorsement.
Mm-hmm.
There was the requirement for endorsement you think about the actual word of the nomination, someone to nominate a candidate.
Right.
There was a requirement for that some time ago, but you know, in recent history, we hadn't had that requirement, and then this became a new requirement under the changes to the MEA. So 25 endorsements are now required.
Mm-hmm. And you have to deliver your paperwork in person.
Yes.
To, it's the old-fashioned way, print it off, come in with your own 2 feet into City Hall. And
yeah, so one thing, so, you know, in the sector, what we did do is we talked about, we talked to the province when they were considering legislative change of the need to modernize the Act. You know, today's day and age, you can purchase a house and never put pen to paper. Mm-hmm. You can do it all digitally and that kind of thing. And you can do a lot of that, you know, at your financial institutions, for example. So we were pushing for a lot of that, but we were really clear as a sector to sort of say to the province, there are places in time where there still needs to be a come in person and file your paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
And so the nomination paper hasn't changed in that sense. It requires an original signature, and it is an effect. In effect, a declaration they're making. So we want those kind of declarations to be in person. They're declaring that they are eligible and qualified to run for office. And they assume the responsibility of making that declaration. The onus is on the candidate to confirm their eligibility.
Right. Because theoretically, you could get, you know, IP freely and no one ever sees this person and no, knocks on no doors and could theoretically get enough votes to be on council. And
right. And so we certainly do check. I mean, we check identification, obviously, when they come in and that kind of thing. But, you know, they're required, even through the term of council, as they remain as a member of council, they're required to maintain that eligibility, which is 18 years of age, a Canadian citizen, and living in the municipality, owner or tenant of property, or the spouse of an owner or tenant of property in Guelph. So they have to maintain that requirement throughout the term, and so they have to be the one to qualify themselves and ensure that they are maintaining that eligibility.
Mm-hmm. So you have to have a face, is what we're getting at. I think people probably underestimate the amount of work that's involved with those papers too, that it's just a matter of, you know, name, address, whatever.
Yeah.
But there's a considerable commitment to running.
Well, I mean, I think the commitment with respect to just the papers is commensurate with the commitment to eventually you may be one of 13 in our case. I mean, you may be working on the school board side, but regardless, you will eventually potentially be beholden to a constituency in our democratic system, and they will have expectations. So yes, the short answer is yes. The paperwork is in effect commensurate with that level of responsibility.
I think what I'm getting at is there may be some people pretty gung ho, and are, you know, here 9 a.m. ready to go. But you know, in your experience, you know, what is there things that, you know, people kind of don't take into account when they're trying to file their papers, that, you know, they may have the enthusiasm gap, but maybe they didn't read a key paragraph in some of this material that we're talking about.
So, you know, absolutely. Something new that we're doing this year is, in light of the legislative changes, we're asking everybody to come in and sit with us. So book a time, not just show up. I mean, you can certainly show up and grab the paperwork, but new this year because of the endorsement is, you could just show up with paperwork and we previously would accept on the spot.
Right.
Now if you show up and you don't have 25 endorsements, we can't accept your nomination. So in light of that change, we've taken the opportunity to say, well, you know, that's one change that is beneficial for us, because we can now require a time to be booked, you know, 20 to 30 minutes for someone to come in and let us walk them through that nomination package.
Mm-hmm.
But in addition to that, there's been so much change legislatively that even the incumbents, both school board and members of council, there's a lot of change for them to be considering. So much so that we've offered two candidate information sessions. So we held one at the end of March, the 22nd of March. Our second and final one is this coming Thursday, April 19th. I'm not sure if your broadcast.
No, it'll just in time.
Good. So hopefully, if you're listening and considering, you can come on out 2 to 4 p.m. on the 19th. And what we've done is we've brought in the ministry folks and our partners at the Ministry of Municipal Affairs, along with ourselves and a gentleman who's got some really good history in the municipal sector, to come out and present information to candidates, because there has been so much change. And it is a lot to go through. It's, as you said, it's not just coming in and first name, last name, signature.
Yeah.
You're making a declaration that you're qualified for office. With that comes responsibilities for the filing of financial statements and responsibilities under campaign finance rules. you know, there's a lot of personal considerations and professional considerations to be made for people that want to run for office.
Let's talk about some of those changes then, because we touched on a couple, the shorter nomination period, 25 signatures. What other changes?
I would say the next biggest change is the change related to, not necessarily specific to candidates, but absolutely inextricably linked to what candidates will be working through, and that's the third-party advertising framework.
Right.
So the province put in rules in place to put structure or a framework around third-party advertisers. So third-party advertisers are anybody that pays for an advertisement in any medium, print, you know, online, radio broadcast, etc. And if they're paying for that advertising and that advertising is opposing or supporting a candidate for office, then that's a third-party advertisement. And with that come rules for the maximum amount that a third-party advertiser can spend,
right.
Rules for how much individuals can contribute, how many, what the aggregate total for contributors can be to all third-party advertising in a jurisdiction. So that's probably the next biggest change.
Let me just ask a quick question about that. Is there a difference between if I have a third party and it's something like we need better transit in Guelph, you know, and I'm just promoting that, or is there a difference between like saying, you know, if I have a third party that says, you know, CAM is great, 4 more years of CAM.
So those are two very different things, right?
Yeah.
You can certainly advocate on issues. The other question we get often is, well, you know, what if I'm tweeting personally on my account
right.
about vote for, or you know, I'm in support of this issue. So if it's free, like a tweet, not third party advertising,
okay,
or a Facebook post. But if you boost that Facebook post and you pay for that boost,
gotcha,
and it's related to a candidate, then that
counts.
Technically become a third-party advertisement.
And, okay.
And then there's responsibilities for those. So they have to register. They have to, you know, in effect, follow a nomination process. We call it a registration process. But they have to register. They're provided with a maximum amount of expenses and contributions that they can receive, similar to the way that we provide that number and that value to candidates as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's probably the next biggest change with respect to the Act. The three big pieces were, you know, date and timeline changes, ranked balloting, and third-party advertising. Those are the big changes.
Tweets are still free. What a relief.
Yeah.
There, on top of that, though, there's been changes at the municipal level, and I'm thinking there's the new rules for in terms of how you can use city facilities and campaigning, but there's also the sign bylaw as well, which is still pending.
Yeah, so pending at the end of this month. We'll come to April's council meeting following what was the discussion that was had. I committed the whole at the beginning of the month. So, we certainly set rules around certain things. We're required by the Act to establish a policy that outlines, you know, how candidates can use corporate resources. And quite frankly, our use of corporate resources policy during an election year is not just restricted to candidates. You know, it speaks to staff. It speaks to incumbents, non-incumbents, all those different sort of players in the election. In the election space. So we set rules around that. That's not necessarily new. I mean, we had some of those rules in place. It was more formalized and it was needed to be updated. And so that's where that change happened. Same things holds true for election signs. We had a sign bylaw before. It spoke to election signs. Staff, my counterparts here at the city in bylaw, you know, felt it would be beneficial to sort of have a separate election sign bylaw from the generic sign bylaw.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's merit in that, obviously, because the reality is, you know, third-party advertising is now something that needs to be considered, right? So a lot of the changes that you've seen from the city side has been precipitated by what's happened in the Act.
Right.
So
you're responding to.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It occurred to me just now, a number of councillors use Facebook and Twitter to promote city business, but they will also undoubtedly be using that to promote through the campaign they'll run again. Is there anything to that, you know, that's any crossover there that should be thinking about?
So it's one of the cases where we sort of have to monitor as we go and that kind of thing. I mean, there's no hard and fast rules in the corporate use of resources policy, but, you know, we find a lot of times with candidates that it's important for them to abide by hard and fast rules that are in the Act. I mean, obviously, finance rules and things like that are very, you know, enshrined in legislation, and certainly our own policies help guide a lot of those things. But a lot of the messaging we give to candidates is, you know, you either need to satisfy yourself that you're abiding by those rules, and you need to sort of ascertain for yourself what you believe is above board. Because at the end of the day, some of these things, you know, if they're not hard and fast in legislation or in city policy,
right,
it will come back to, and most importantly, what the electorate feels of you. And so come October 22nd, you know, how you use social media, for example, can play a significant factor in the candidate's, you know, success or not. So we have those.
It's happened before.
Yeah, we have those conversations. I mean, the nice thing is, for example, those candidate information sessions, that gives candidates the opportunity and the ability to ask those kind of questions, and for us to answer those and provide that. You know, sometimes it's not a black and white line, and it's not necessarily cut and dry. There is a lot of gray, and so, you know, my advice to folks is, you satisfy yourself. That's your campaign. I'm not. I will never be in a position, and I won't advise on your campaign.
Right.
But understand that gray line, and understand what it means to walk into that gray area, or maybe the benefit of not being in that gray area. So
it does strike me that this is a gray area, because Twitter and Facebook and Google, these are not city resources, but they are certainly used by the city.
And so that's the challenge we have, right? That fact of the matter that you just said is absolutely concrete. And the reality is, I talked about it before, there's 444 municipalities. Every municipality is going to, you know, approach this issue differently, right? You know, in some municipalities, we don't have this, for example, but in some municipalities, there are administrative staff that support members of council. Those administrative staff may be municipal staff,
right,
and they may have been charged with managing social media accounts of sitting members of council. So how does that change when they become candidates for those municipalities? So a lot of it is very situational based in terms of the different systems and processes that each individual municipality has. I know that some of my counterparts are struggling with that very question. We don't have that example,
right,
that I gave here.
Right, because the mayor, who's very active on social media, and the councillors who are active on social media manage their own.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. I do want to get into the finance piece, because I think it's overlooked. What should people know about campaign finance? I mean, a lot of people aren't going to be spending fundraising thousands and thousands of dollars. You know, most people, it's going to be out of pocket, but you do have to account for, you do have to nickel and dime yourself for
that. Well, I'm gonna respond to your question first from those people in the community that may be contributing to candidates.
Okay.
So, you know, fundamental part of our democracy is being able to support candidates, and provide contributions as you see fit as an independent citizen in the community. What those individuals need to know that choose to support candidates, they need to know that there's a maximum that they can contribute to any one individual candidate, and that information is available on our website. They need to know that there is an aggregate total that they can contribute to members on the same board or council. So if you like the idea and principles of five members of council, you can't spend over a threshold in terms of the contributions you make to those five.
Right.
So there's that piece. The other piece that I would really impress upon members of the community that might be contributing to municipal candidates is there is no tax incentive to donations to municipal candidates. So when you donate to a federal or provincial candidate, you're actually making a donation to the party.
Right.
And the Canada Revenue Agency has rules that acknowledge that as a deduction, right? You can deduct that off your taxable income in at tax time. That same process does not hold true because, as you know, we don't have political parties at the municipal level. And so a contribution to a municipal candidate is a wholesome contribution.
In for a penny.
And some municipalities have, the Act allows us to have this contribution rebate programs, where the municipality then rebates a portion of that contribution back to the contributor. We do not have those, that type of program in Guelph. They're not common across the province, but they do exist.
I was going to ask, yeah.
I would say, you know, a handful being, you know, 10 to 15 municipalities may have contribution rebate programs. They're generally GTA or sort of Southern Ontario, Greater Golden Horseshoe municipalities.
Okay.
The important thing to remember about that is those are then funded wholly by the tax base.
Right.
So, you know, councils grapple with that across the province. So that's from the side of the contributor. Those are probably the biggest rules that you need to be mindful of. And again, the onus is on the contributor to know how much they've given to an individual candidate,
right,
whether it's over a certain amount,
mm-hmm,
and what the aggregate total is that they can give to members on the same council or running, mm-hmm, for the same office, I should say.
Right.
We impress upon candidates that they should be sharing that information with contributors when they're receiving contributions.
Right.
So that's very important, and you know, those information sessions share that kind of information with candidates.
Sharing the information that about the limits, and
I mean, right, the reality is, I'm not going to tag along with every candidate as they knock on doors and potentially accept contributions. So
right.
In fact, you won't see me farther away from them than at that time. But the reality is, they need to be partners with us in sharing that information with the electorate and mm-hmm, the community at large. The other thing that's interesting is at the end of the election, I am tasked with, under some changes to the Act, of forwarding to the Compliance Audit Committee, which is a body set up to review the financial statements of candidates, anywhere where there appears to be an over contribution by a contributor.
Oh, okay.
So that's a new change, a very big change. So, and the reason why I bring that up is, again, I think it speaks to the importance of contributors knowing the rules about where they can contribute and how much they can contribute,
mm-hmm,
and in turn candidates sharing that knowledge and that information as well with contributors.
Because it's not necessarily malicious. It's not someone peddling or something.
It could
like
happen
that.
quite innocently.
Yeah.
So that's on the side of the contributor. In terms of the rules for candidates and their rules for financial filing, not a lot has changed. They're required, so they can't incur an expense or receive a contribution until they file their nomination papers.
Mm-hmm.
When they do file nomination papers, their first job should be driving to their local financial institution and opening up a campaign account,
mm-hmm,
so that everything goes into that account and everything comes out of that account.
Mm-hmm.
They have rules with respect to what their maximum amount of expenses can be, and we provide that number to them, and it's based on a formula that's provided in the legislation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so that, you know, there's a level playing field for all candidates for mayor. They can't spend over that certain amount the same way there would be an equal playing field for all ward councillors, for example, in Ward 1 and Ward 2 and that kind of thing. And those numbers change based on the it's based off the electors. So
mm-hmm,
the number of electors for that contest is directly related to how much the maximum amounts can be. Candidates are required to file financial statements by a set deadline. It's in March of 2019, so following the election, they've got to file their financial statements.
Mm-hmm.
They can incur expenses after a certain period, after the formal campaign period.
Right.
So there's a lot of hard and fast rules for them to follow as well. And those, again, it speaks to, we talked about earlier with the nomination, it's not as simple as coming in and first name, last name, sign on the dotted line, and
yep,
away we go. Certainly that's part of it, but we also want to share with them information about what they can and cannot do from a financial standpoint with respect to their campaign.
I do want to touch on school boards too, because I feel like we kind of forget about them in election time. And it's an unusual area too, because this is a provincial area that,
yep,
we're being asked to weigh in on by,
yep,
by electing those trustees. What's the difference between maybe how you go, if there is a difference between, you know, nominating for trustee, and then what are the different rules versus stuff we've talked about?
Yeah, so, you know, I would say the bulk of it is not wholly different.
Mm-hmm.
They have to file the same nomination paper. They have to abide by the same campaign rules. We provide them with the same maximum campaign amount that they're permitted to spend in the election. So, you know, we provide all of those same things to those candidates. The difference, I would say, is that, you know, the school boards have their own use of corporate resources policies.
Yep.
And so they, you know, an incumbent school board trustee cannot use board resources and is limited, you know, in use of board resources in the same way that a member of council is limited for using city resources.
Right.
They will have their own compliance audit committees and are required to establish those committees themselves. So it's very, very similar. But, you know, we work closely with the directors of both the English Separate and the English Public Boards in Guelph. And we work with their staff to ensure that there's a sharing of information and knowledge. They set the determinations of how many, you know, trustees one would elect in Guelph. So we get that information from the board, and that informs, you know, when you go to the voting location and you see I'm going to vote for X trustee, I have the choice of picking three names, for example.
Right.
So they give us those determinations. It's very similar in most regards to the campaign rules and processes for school board trustee candidates as well as council candidates.
So for people running for trustee, do they also have to consult like the Upper Grand District School Board website for information?
Yeah.
Their research is doubled.
Yeah, absolutely. They're going to want to be informed and knowledgeable about if someone's making a decision to run for trustee, they're going to want to know about, you know, board processes, board rules, how the board makes decisions, the spheres of influence that the board can quote unquote legislate within. The same way that we would want a member of council to consider that too. I mean, if your hope as an elected, an aspiring elected politician is to impact how Canada spends on defense spending, your seat is not here at 1 Carden Street in Guelph.
Yeah.
You should be seeking federal nomination, right?
Right.
That's a very big oversimplification, I know, but you know, candidates have to understand what spheres of influence these legislative bodies are influencing in, and so they're consulting school board websites, city websites, and that kind of thing for the rules and also for what they're getting into.
Right. Do your homework. we're sitting here a couple of weeks away from when nominations begin.
Yeah.
So, you know, what are you doing right now? What's your office up to in terms of getting ready?
So finalizing the nomination package. We received the nomination papers. They were being updated by the province. So we have the updated nomination papers from them. There are statutory, certain forms that are statutory, in that they are required forms.
Mm-hmm.
And so the province updates those, and then we basically take those forms and brand them with Guelph branding. So they're basically provincial forms with a Guelph logo on them. But so we only received those sort of early April. So we've been busy incorporating those forms, and quite frankly, we get knowledge from those forms, right? How they're laid out, how the endorsement forms are laid out for the 25 signatures helps us develop the information that we share with candidates for the nomination process. So we've been busy doing that. We're busy preparing for May 1st. May 1st is a Tuesday. And so Guelph.ca/vote is now live. That's the one place that both candidates and electors can and should go for their first stop shop for anything, any information that you're looking for related to the municipal election. And as of April 30th, the Monday, we'll be putting up formally those nomination packages so that individuals can look at them, review them, print off the endorsement forms, get those 25 endorsements before they come in on May 1st, for example. And so we'll have that up first thing on April 30th.
So you can't get a piece of foolscap and get 25 signatures starting today.
That's very key. That's a prescribed form, as they say. So you can't get your notebook out and get 25 people to sign it. So we're busy with that. But then we're in the throes of what's happening in the next 2, 3, 4 months. So accessibility checks, physical accessibility checks of all the voting locations. Finalizing deadlines for the delivery of equipment that we're expecting from the vendor in terms of our tabulators, right? We use the tabulation machines to speed up the final count process at the end of the night. We're buying the Sharpies so that people can mark their ballots. Down to that level of detail, beginning in June and July through August and early September, we will work on advertising for hiring of staff for the election. So there's a lot of little check boxes to tick along the way in terms of what we're working on. But from the nomination package, it's more about finalizing it and getting it ready to get up online.
I did want to ask you about the accessibility piece, because that was a big message coming out of that council meeting last year about online voting, and I know council was fairly emphatic about making sure that this is going to be as accessible as possible for people who have that barrier. Can you talk a bit about that work so far in terms of?
Yeah, certainly. We heard that message loud and clear. Certainly, and I think council was sincerely grappling with it at that meeting where they decided on internet voting. I mean, we heard that internet voting was very beneficial for individuals and persons with disabilities. We heard that from members of our own Accessibility Advisory Committee. On the flip side, we understand the security challenges that Council was working through in that regard. So in light of that kind of push-pull, we will have more locations, physical voting locations, than we did in 2018. Mm-hmm. In 2014. Much the same as we did in 2014, all of those locations will be assessed for physical accessibility. So we measure the grade of the slope leading from the parking lot into the voting location. We measure the width of doorways and sort of egress and ingress points into the facility. So we're doing physical accessibility checks. So all of the voting locations will be measured against the level of accessibility, and we'll have to sort of ascertain our comfort level with that level of accessibility with respect to ensuring that there's you know, a voting location within close proximity to most of the electors in Guelph. So it's sort of a thing we grapple with, but we work through that. One thing that we are doing in 2018, which is a continuation of what we offered in 2014, it may have been not as apparent because internet voting was the discussion in 2014, but electors during the advance vote period will have the ability to vote in any of the advance voting locations within the city. You won't be prescribed to attend to this voting location based on where you live. So we'll have three voting locations during the advance voting period that we kind of, we put one sort of in the north end, one in centrally, and then one in the south end of the city. So Evergreen Senior Center here at City Hall, and then the Clare Road Emergency Center down on Clare Road in the south end of the city. And so those voting locations, you can go to any one of those locations. So, you know, if you're picking up the kids from soccer practice, for example, and it makes more sense to stop at the one that's at the other end of town from home, you can do that. And then sort of at a less macro level, on election day, electors can vote at any of the voting locations within their ward.
Okay.
So we do have voting subdivisions. We try and have a voting location in each of those voting subdivisions, but the reality is the need to delineate those subdivisions within the ward structure as sort of a subset of the ward structure isn't as necessary now because you can vote at any of the locations in your ward.
Okay.
So in the same way, you know, you're coming home from the grocery store and it makes more sense to pop into the voting location that's near the grocery store as opposed to the one that's you know, right around the corner from home. If that's more convenient for you,
right,
it's more accessible, you can go to that voting location, as provided it's within your ward on election day.
Interesting.
The other thing we do is one of the voting locations in each of the wards will not only be, so they're all physically accessible, but one of the voting locations in every ward will have accessible voting equipment,
mm-hmm,
that is connected to the tabulator. So that allows electors that may have visual impairments or vision disabilities to mark a ballot independently on their own without the requirement to have someone accompany them behind the voting screen. The same holds true for electors with disabilities that are related to sort of motor function. So if they have limited physical capacity or motor skills to be able to mark a ballot on their own,
mm-hmm,
even if they're vision impaired, then they also can mark a ballot on those. So we've got paddles that allow people to navigate a ballot, an audio ballot that's read to them over headset,
okay,
to mark, answer yes or no questions and mark that ballot on their own independently.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing holds true up to the level of individuals that may need, for example, or their disability is such that they have very limited motor skills and physical abilities. They can use a pneumatic sip and puff device to sip and puff their yes and no answers to that same audio ballot.
Okay.
So we take accessibility very, very seriously. We make sure that all the voting locations are on transit routes or within a reasonable walk or distance from a transit stop,
mm-hmm,
so that people can leverage the city's accessible fleet of transit as well as the mobility service, the scheduled mobility service that
right,
transit has. So that we hope that people can get out to the voting location, and regardless of your disability, you will be able to mark a ballot on your own, whether that's being accompanied by someone to assist you or to use some of the technology we have. And again, we have each of those, that technology is available in at least one location in every ward on election day.
Okay.
So we think we've answered the accessibility question.
I think we've covered all the bases here, and if we haven't, we've certainly told people where they can
absolutely
get those bases covered. So we'll let you get back to work. Stephen O'Brien, thank you for your time
Thanks,
today.
Thanks, appreciate it.
And once again, that was the City of Guelph Clerk, Stephen O'Brien. Nominations for City Councilor, School Board Trustee, and Mayor open on Tuesday, May 1st, and close on Friday, July 27th. You can find out more information on how to run, who's running, and answers to your municipal election questions at vote.guelph.ca. And there is, as I said earlier and as alluded to in the podcast, one more information session that takes place in the council chambers at City Hall at 1 Carton Street. That is on Thursday, April the 19th, tomorrow, if you are listening to this on Wednesday. So April the 19th from 2 to 4 p.m. at City Hall. And last but not least, Election Day is Monday, October 22nd. And that is it for this week's Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. The host for the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes, and while you're there, you can also listen to Open Sources Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson. You can go to the Guelph Politico Facebook page at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And you can donate to Guelph Politico on Patreon at patreon.com/guelphpolitico. If you like locally sourced independent media in the city of Guelph, then please consider donating. For all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca, where we will have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly. And until then, see you next time.